I'm Fathery.
This is Dave.
And this is Text Trek.
Engage.
So, a lot of mixed feelings about tonight's topic. We're going to be talking about the Klingons of Star Trek Discovery.
Let me just ask you, Fathery, single biggest sticking point for you so far on Discovery?
Yeah, if I could change anything about the show based on what I've been seeing, without a doubt I would want to change the look of these Klingons.
Like what if basically it just became their fancy, you know, makeup version of the classic, you know, what we think of as the motion picture look, and Next Generation and all that stuff. If they just changed that, it would fix a lot of stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the best thing to do would be
still sarcophagus ship and all that stuff going on, all the different houses we're going to see more of, if they just looked like the fucking Klingons we know.
Yeah, but it's not the biggest deal in the world. I am still going to watch the show. Worst case scenario, I'll be like, the show would have been better if they changed the Klingons. Like,
are you going to go ahead and do a little mental canon thing? You're going to get the no prize and find a way to justify why they look different?
Yeah, well, we might have a way to justify it already, depending on who you ask, based off of what we learned at Star Trek Las Vegas. During the panel with Neville Page and Glenn Hetrick, who some may know from the Sci-Fi Channel show Face Off.
Oh, it's the makeup show?
Yeah. I've never watched it. I don't know anything about it.
I heard good stuff about it, but I also have not watched it.
The only Face Off I know had Nicolas Cage and, who was it, John Travolta?
Yep. Two acting titans at their peak.
Oh, that's a work of art.
I saw the movie about a year ago again at the Alamo Drafthouse, and although it wasn't their Master Pancake Theater, which for those of you who don't know, that's our local version, live version of like Mystery Science Theater. Some guys spoof it in the theater while you watch it. Although it was not that, that's still kind of what it was, because like the audience was like kind of enjoying it on an ironic level. We were, like, laughing our asses off at this amazing, ridiculous performance, which I think when it came out in the 90s, it just kind of took it all at face value. But I found the movie was much more entertaining when I could also laugh at it.
Cool. Well, the Face Off TV show about makeup artists who compete, and I guess I think they might be judges on the show, but Page and Hetrick, they have Alchemy Studios, and they've been charged with creating the makeup for the aliens and creatures on Star Trek Discovery. So they've done the work for Saru. I guess they're the ones putting the Vulcan ears on James Frayn to turn him into Sarek. And they were also responsible for redesigning the Klingons. And we've talked before about how the Klingons look weird. We've tried to come up with different explanations, but it sounds like these are just going to be some normal 23rd century Klingons that just look like this. We know that there's going to be 24 different houses. Some different houses might look different, but we've already seen Klingons of two different houses, and as far as the makeup, the organics, they're identical. They're different costumes, but the actual alien creature that the Klingon is supposed to be, they have the same hairless design, kind of exaggerating the ridges on the face. So, Dave, what do you think about the being stuck with these Klingons?
it's a sticking point for me, too. I think I braced for this a long time ago and, like, figured that this was... They just wanted to... I mean, the least charitable way I could put it is they just wanted to make their mark. The most charitable way I can think of to put it is that their special effects guys have all kinds of new ideas and really feel that fans will warm to it and that this is, you know, going to be a strong way to kind of make a visual statement with all the modern technology. I don't know, whatever. Yeah. But yeah, you know, it's sort of a... This is not only a, if it's not broke, don't fix it, but we've often... I think my mantra and yours on this is, if you're going to change something, change it for the better. And like, this... universally, I would say the Klingons are beloved, their look, and iconic. It's like people... You could even show us, I think, a civilian, in many cases, who doesn't really watch Star Trek at all, a picture of a Klingon... And say, this is one of the aliens from Star Trek. Do you know who it is? Or do you know what they are? There would be a decent chance they'd be able to say Klingon. So, yeah, it kind of hurts. I am holding out some small hope that there's an explanation, a link to the other stuff. But, you know, they're putting so much work into this. Very clearly, the special effects guys are busting their asses. That I do not see them doing that just so that they can say, oh, these guys are just one of many looks, or would go on to evolve in, you know, and grow hair at some point. Well, I think they simply have decided that. And I really, I wish, you know, the same way that they've, you know, very overtly clarified this show takes place in the original series timeline and not the Kelvin timeline, I would like for them to, and I don't think they have, to lay down a definitive... statement on the Klingons.
Yeah, and we keep hoping maybe it's something we find out in the show, but here's the thing, and it's something that I heard Doug Drexler, who did makeup and ship designs on Star Trek, something I heard him say, and for those of you who don't know about Doug, he was a big fan of the original series and then got a job on The Next Generation, and worked on Star Trek all the way up until Enterprise. He actually designed the NX-01 Enterprise on the show.
Fantastic design.
Canon was important to him because he was this big fan. You know, he was always a Star Trek nerd before he even worked on the show. And one of the things he said about designers that might be working on Discovery, you know, something that happens in Hollywood is that people go to work on a project that they might not have that deep connection with, that deep respect for the canon, and they go in with the intent to design things themselves because they're worried about getting the next job after this, and so they use it as like an opportunity. You know, in this case, you know, the Klingons. Someone can get a job on Discovery and say, okay, if I can come up with a really cool alien design for these Klingons on Star Trek Discovery, that'll help me get the next job, and then the next job. And however,
I've heard that discussed before in regards to kind of like superhero movies and the kind of the sometimes overly designed costumes that they'll get. That the notion that they're sort of, you know, either leaning towards their next job or kind of justifying their budget. You know, they're like, we can't just translate Superman to the big screen. We have to give it our own spin, you know, that it's almost a compulsion.
But we do know that Glenn Hetrick, he's a self-proclaimed fan of Star Trek.
And a likely story.
Well, if we delve into what they actually said at the panel, they do kind of come up with some justifications for some of the things. Let's just take a look at what they're saying here. Hetrick wanted to assure fans that the team was taking Star Trek history into account with the designs. He was quoted as saying, "There is also another step to this design process, which is not just logic or the aesthetic or the chemical or physical process. It is an almost religious level of devotion to the integrity of canon and making sure that all of you are getting what you want out of it. We spend a lot of time talking about how things would work in the story and constantly buttressing our thought process with things from canon and from stories."
that sounds like he's saying something different from what they're doing.
Yeah, that
sounds great. Is it what they're doing? Right.
That's not really quite what it looks like.
Yeah, well, so the polar opposite of what I'm seeing would be religious devotion to canon. Unless there's something they're not telling us, which it could be something so important, so integral to it, that they cannot speak in it for fear of... They'll spill the beans, they'll blow one of their big surprises that they've kept. And I could see that. It could be that after the episode is aired, there may be some big things to talk about. And that would be difficult. This is one of those things where you... If, say, they do incorporate... you know, this will allow for the Klingons designs we know and fits into canon in some clever way that we haven't figured out yet. You have to lie to fans. You're going to have to... you don't want to say your new designs are weak, you know? You have to talk about how excited you are and, you know, and kind of talk around it and sort of speak in abstract like this. But you can't just say, you guys are going to be happy because the other designs are coming back too, you know? On the other hand, I don't know why they would make that a plot point and keep it hidden. I'm not, you know, like... Unless it was, if they really are doing that, you know, what would be so big about it that they would feel it's more important that people be surprised, and they risk alienating people at this stage of the game who might be kind of continuity purists who aren't as open-minded.
Well, one of the justifications that they go on to say is that they want to make a bigger Klingon Empire where we see a vastness to that society that hasn't been seen before.
Right.
And
they could just be spotlighting that. But wouldn't you figure that somewhere in the background is some long-ass hair Klingons?
Well, that's what... And if they just show one of those, then everything's okay.
Right. Or I should say one of the Attila the Hun-looking Klingons of the classic Trek. So somewhere in that mix.
Yeah. Hedrick went on to say, the Empire is very big. They don't all grow up on Kronos. They don't all live on the same planets, and certainly those different planets would have different environments. So how would the culture have evolved differently? We tried to come up with cultural axioms for each house, so each looks different, and they bear a cultural patina like our cultures do here on Earth.
Okay. Well, I guess I hadn't seen this. To me, that sounds like they could be opening the door for it. That the house of who's the big Klingon guy?
T'Kuvma is the house of Kalus.
Kalus, yeah. Okay, so he's from that house, but we know he doesn't look like that.
Yeah, and we know that's not what Kalus looks like because we've seen a clone of Kalus.
Yeah,
and we've seen a guy from the house of Kor, and we know Kor doesn't look like that because we've seen Kor on the original series and on Deep Space Nine. He's been both a ridged and ridgeless Klingon.
Oh man, I still haven't gotten around to that episode, and I did not realize he was ridged in that one. That's fascinating. I don't know how they're going to pull this, integrate this, and it might not even be a point. They're just like, oh, there's lots of different versions of bald Klingons in this thing. Look at how different and visually different all these houses are. But yeah, they're all bald. But if you're doing that many houses, why not take the opportunity to allow for some of them to look like what we expect? The argument can be made that it's like, oh, well, if you see that, then you're just going to want that, and you're not going to come to love our awesome
I will always want that, though. I'm not going to change.
Yeah. So you say, after three seasons of this amazing Discovery show, you'll be like, I don't know why I even ever liked Worf.
I will never say that.
Anyway, I hope that statement does make it sound like there could be Klingons all over the galaxy that are, you know, their houses are on different planets, and the different atmospheres and all and cultural traditions and all that it could allow for it. So, I like the statement.
And they've also said that the only thing that we really changed with these Klingons was just a shave and a haircut. Other than that, they can still be the same old Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm looking at we're looking right now at some of the previous incarnations of Klingons. We're looking at
what they look like? badasses.
Except for, I know that you're not that fond of the Discovery, I mean the Star Trek Into Darkness Klingon.
Yeah.
Who looks a lot like what we're looking at now, and I think the same guys working on Discovery worked on Star Trek Into Darkness.
Mm.
And on the Blu-ray for that movie, there's actually some alternative Klingon designs that some of them actually do look better.
Mm-hmm.
Cool thing about Star Trek Into Darkness, though, is that some of the Klingons, they're all wearing those helmets, of course, that cover up their entire face.
Mm-hmm.
But you do see some of them, they have long hair or long beards hanging mm-hmm. out. And we know that they had to coexist with this hairless Klingon that was the one who took off his helmet to Uhura.
Right.
So I guess...
So there is a tradition of bald Klingons chilling out with haired Klingons.
Yeah.
Even if it's in the Kelvin timeline.
Yeah, but it just doesn't really gel with the past looks. And I have seen... I'm trying to find a picture of it now, but a photoshopped image of... the Star Trek Discovery Klingon with a hair and beard, like, photoshopped onto him. Somebody...
I'm not surprised. I'm going to just quick as an aside say, it feels to me like the nerdiest of the nerdy to be doing, like, an episode so focused on something that is so speculative, but also, you know, like, such a, like, you change the look of the Klingons, you know? Like, on one level, that's super nerdy, super canon-y, but... Yeah, man, the Klingons looked cool. It's like, why would you change it?
And, you know, I'm okay with, just to reiterate, like, a little bit of changing as long as you change it for the better. Good example, the Andorians on the original series look different from the Andorians on Enterprise. The ones on Enterprise look better, though. They added some...
They added movement?
Movement to the antennae and...
Yeah, they gave them sort of more elaborate costumes and things like that. They look great. That was a perfect example of a good update.
And I don't see these Discovery Klingons as a change for the better.
Father is flipping through Google image search right now trying to find something, and he's passing a lot of images that include stuff like Christopher Lloyd as what's his name? Krug in Star Trek III and his lieutenants, and they're all like looking at the monitor and their faces are like lit up from the monitor that they're looking on, so they're very dramatically lit and they look awesome. They look like such badasses. I love that somewhere between Road Warrior and like, you know, barbarian like tribesmen, you know, look that they've got, like a little bit of Northmen barbarianism, a little bit of Viking in there. Man, it's such a good look. It's a shame to give that aspect up.
And I think the root cause for this... Well, we know that the root cause is that Brian Fuller mandated bald Klingons. But I think the
That's
reason...
That's why they had to kick him off.
Maybe. I would have kicked him off for that. No, I'm just kidding. But I think the main reason for this drastic shift in the Klingon appearance is to make the Klingons look more alien. Casual viewers who... might have watched some Star Trek in the past, but they would have thought, oh, well, that looks like a guy with latex on his head and a wig.
Right.
And if I guess the thinking is that those people will look at Star Trek Discovery and think, oh, that looks like an alien.
Right.
But they are putting a lot of thought into this design. So I guess the effort is there. It's just not the direction I would go in. The official explanation that was given at the panel for the bald Klingons is that they are the apex predator, and they wanted to highlight that the Klingons have these kind of like how like a snake has like the sensors in the front of their face.
Mm-hmm.
They have like these little holes on top of the Klingon head along the ridges to where they would, I guess, detect their prey if they're supposed to be the apex predator.
Mm.
And so the Klingons are bald to show that off.
Sure, whatever.
And the designers went so far as to design the skull of the Klingon. And they kind of designed the rest of it out from that. After they knew what shape the skull was going to be, then they knew how to shape the rest of the head and create the reimagined Klingon.
It looks neat. Doesn't look like a Klingon to me, but it looks neat.
You know, so the main thing that bothers me here is the elongated head.
Right.
And
you know what it looks like? It looks like the alien in Enemy Mine. Louis Gossett Jr.'s.
It even has a hint of the alien in Alien, how because that's the ultimate elongated
right,
head.
Right, right, right. Big old giant phallic dong head.
And
you yeah, don't so want people talking about your Klingons dong heads.
You don't. Yeah, don't. The Klingons are already dickheads, kind of. They
yes.
We were talking about Star Trek being heavy-handed previously, and
yeah, their use of allegory and metaphor sometimes is not what you'd call subtle.
Yeah, we get it. They're dickheads. No, it's not quite elongated that much, but we've seen a bald Klingon before. Now that I think about it, Christopher Plummer.
Yeah, in Star Trek VI.
Yeah, as General Chang.
Yep.
And he didn't
he
have.
Was just, he was wearing the right clothes.
He didn't have a weird elongated head.
What can change in 20 years? Whole morphologies can change because evolution works super fast. If there's one thing I know, evolution is super fast. They have a lot to prove here. They need to show us that it's worth it. You know, it if they come across as alien enough, because we haven't really... Have we seen him speak yet in the show?
We see T'Kuvma speak in the second trailer, the one that dropped at Comic-Con.
What did he
say? He says, we've been waiting for someone worthy of our attention, mm-hmm. or something to that effect.
Yeah, but no real chance for like their presence to kind of sink in. So, and or do we expect any sort of other major trailers, do you think, before that begins? Probably something, right?
I think...
maybe one more big trailer?
I think TV spots. I think they're going to use TV spots in the next few weeks, especially when football starts on CBS, because that's just, you know, ratings heaven. You're going to reach out to so many TV sets across the country. And they'll probably use footage from the previous two trailers, as well as little bitty bits we haven't seen yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess what I would say is what I would hope from those is to see some glimpses of how these Klingons carry themselves, what their speech patterns are, you know, what stands out about them when you talk to one. You know, I would say of the original Klingons that there was a sense of guile that was always, you know, kind of very present whenever they're speaking. It's sort of a sense that they could at any moment put a knife through you, maybe, or that they were plotting against you. And the kind of the Klingons of Worf's era became more brutish, more immediately kind of physically intimidating, and you know at the same time also kind of like were reimagined with their strong code of honor. They so you know all those things came through when you were talking to them. What's going to come through with these guys? That's what I'll be interested to see.
Yeah, and we do know that they want to. What we learned at Comic-Con that the Klingons are going to be less brutish, mm-hmm. and they want to have more of a, I guess, more fully realized civilization.
This all is trying to make up for all those seasons of Worf being like, I think we should open fire immediately and, like, belay that order. Yeah, it's just endless shutdowns of Worf's attack plans. These images that you're looking at right now, I see a Klingon dagger that looks actually pretty traditional in a lot of ways. It's got the little things that pop out on the side.
Duck Tog.
Yeah.
As introduced in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock.
Mm-hmm. And what looks like, there's some close-ups on it. It has what I would say to me is a, you know, the kind of thing that I think of is very influenced by H.R. Giger's alien designs, which is to say the pommel, is it, or the hilt of the blade? Yeah, the hilt of the blade. Has it looks like it's made up of like miniature overlapping spinal columns. It's very has a ridged look. It's very like hyper elaborate, and that looks like that's the crest on the forehead viewed from the back. Maybe
this is the helmet. They have a
oh, it is a helmet. Okay.
So while they were there at this panel, they did get into some more detail about like the Klingon armor and the functionality. They called these the periscope helmets, which include a heads-up display inside, which is an interesting idea. Not something we've seen Klingons using before, but I guess it makes sense. But yeah, it's very elaborate
designs. Like
designs.
The force fields that we're going to have. We're like, that's not a real super Star Trek-y thing. We're going to have to see about that.
But, I mean, I guess the technology would would be there for, you know, Klingons to have some type of HUD display when they go into battle.
Sure, it'd be extremely tactically handy.
Yeah, what we're looking at now with this periscope helmet, just a problem I have with designs like this is I think they get a little too busy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something you see a lot of today with movies and TV shows, and I know the reason is that they're shooting everything in 4K and they want things to look good on 4K. Just like on the original series in the 60s when the new thing was color TV.
Mm.
They tried to pack a shitload of color into every frame.
Right.
Which,
lots of, like, violet lights on, you know, Kirk's face, and or the cave that they're going through where the walls are made of, like, sort of paper bags and stuff like that. By the way, it looks super cool.
Scotty's Jeffrey's tube with the red and yellow pipes running through.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of created a cool, iconic, classic look.
Right, along with the iconic colors of their... uniforms.
But these super busy designs, they just look kind of messy to me. There's so much going on.
If you've seen, like, you know, like ancient Egyptian, you know, like some of their artifacts, like, oh, here's Nefertiti's comb or whatever, and sometimes those are crazy, you know, like, especially among the wealthy, they are way busy. But, you know, like, depending on who these people are, I don't think that, you know, I don't know that you want everything to be so busy.
It looks,
The sarcophagus ship is like a big ceremonial thing, so.
Everything is very ornate.
Right. Yeah, and what's weird is that although the Klingons look, the traditional look had detail to it, they did not seem like guys who would do this, like, all this, like, you know, very fine metal crafting. You know, the, what do they call the blade again that we just looked at?
Duktog, I think, yeah, is how you pronounce
that. Or even a simple botleth. Imagine if, you know, the botleth has a great, simple design, looks super awesome, but imagine if it was, like, covered with etchings, you know, and it had, like, the Klingon symbol in there, and then, you know, there's, like, even the closer you get, the more detail there is. That would be overly designed. The only person I would want to wield that would be maybe as a, you know, a ceremonial weapon or something like that. So there's a little fear of overdesign too. I'll definitely throw that out there.
And we got another look at the Torchbearer armor, which I believe is going to be donned by T'Kuvma.
That's a video game boss armor.
But this, I actually kind of like this.
It looks cool.
If you look at the close-up on here, you see this is actually... They explained this was supposed to represent a Klingon sacrificing himself for honor. I guess this gets kind of with the whole notion of you know, the philosophy of today is a good day to die.
What is that? Okay, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
But, yeah, the
what am I seeing here? This is a zoom-in on what part?
On... I think that's on the arms.
Okay,
but
so imagine, you know, the kind of the ridges that you know, that you see whether on on Klingons' heads or sometimes on their armor. This ridge at the joining the interconnective points where there's imagine like a vertical ridge and a horizontal ridge meeting like a little mountain range, and there's etched out of it is like what looks like a crucified guy.
Yeah, but he's upside down, and as they were explaining, his body forms the Klingon symbol.
Oh yeah,
with the 3 points.
It's true. His arms are like bent in such a way that it even has the curvature of the 2 lower points. As they bend to the right.
So,
It's also the kind of thing feels overly designed to me. In context, we'll see, because yes, this sounds all very ritualistic, and so it might make complete sense. But I do worry that this is, I believe I've brought this up before, like the Superman costume from, I think, Superman Returns.
Superman Returns, yeah.
Yeah.
Where if you pause the movie on close-ups of Superman, you see that his entire costume is just made of the S triangle shield Superman logo.
Like thousands of little tiny ones that create a sort of texture in the same way that Spider-Man in the Sam Raimi movies had a texture to his costume.
Yeah, but it wasn't like he didn't have like a whole bunch of like little spiders making up his costume. Like,
right.
It wasn't nearly as bad.
Yeah, I just
as
mean
Superman.
That it gives a slight texture to Superman's costume, which is also itself kind of a little bit weird. But yes, I'm like, wow, the Kryptonians, they were so in love with that shield design that their environment suits are aesthetically made up of tens of thousands of them. So I hope it's not like that.
In the JJ movies, they had the tiny deltas on the Starfleet yep. uniforms, which they kind of are doing in Discovery on the gold trim on Captain Georgiou and Commander Burnham, on their sides where they have mm-hmm. their division color.
Yeah.
That's made up of a bunch of little deltas.
Well, that's stupid, but I will say that
it'll look good in 4K is why they're doing it.
It'll look good in 4K, right. It makes everything look like it's got a texture. I will say this. In the Kelvin movies, I actually ultimately thought those uniforms looked really good on the screen. I can give them a little bit of leeway on that one and say that despite being kind of annoyed when I saw the close-ups and all those deltas, it looks pretty good.
I still don't like it. And I was happy...
God forbid somebody just have any plain anything in these stories.
Yeah. I was happy in Star Trek Beyond when Frank Lin came on board and got rid of that. Although I don't know why he had those weird collars in I don't know, it almost it had kind of like a shoulder pad look. Oh. He almost got the uniforms right.
Right, right.
it was still an improvement. But, one thing that I have to keep in mind with this weird Klingon aesthetic that I don't like is that if I had not seen any images of Klingons, and it was just the things I've been hearing from way back when Brian Fuller was talking about the show before his departure to all the things the writers and actors have said recently, we're getting a show that's going to show a Klingon war with a lot of Klingon perspective.
Mm-hmm. Given real respect and not sort of token, we'll let them say their piece real quick and get off screen.
Yeah, and touching on what Brian Fuller said long ago, that the original series episode Balance of Terror was a touchstone for the first season of Star Trek Discovery and the season-long story they're telling. I can kind of see that we're going to get like a whole war that has like that back and forth
mm-hmm.
perspective of the two different opposite sides. And I love Klingons in Star Trek, and that sounds great. That sounds fantastic. I want a show that's going to explore those Klingons. So with that in mind, I am going into this open-minded. I'm going to give these Klingons a shot.
In the spirit of Star Trek,
yeah.
I feel like you have to give them a chance to prove themselves,
And, worst case scenario, I can just, we never get any kind of explanation or legitimate justification for this departure, and I just tell myself, these were Klingons trying to undo the damage of the augment virus introduced in Enterprise, and they did some weird genetic engineering, and now they look like this.
Here is your Star Trek No Prize, sir. Your Q Prize for altering reality.
I'll take it. Yeah, that is the ultimate No Prize in Star Trek, though, where you can explain anything, is to say Q did it.
Yeah, that's true.
But you don't want to play that card too often.
It's the platypus card.
Dave, any other thoughts?
I think you made a good point about that there's like a lot about this that actually sounds really cool. I was also trying to think sometimes of like, imagine if, say, the internet had been around back in the 60s and 70s, and as we're approaching the new designs of, say, the movie Trek, how resistant people might have been to the motion pictures, alien, Klingons, based on what they knew of the original series.
Yeah, but that's a lot different when you're changing a design that you just saw in three seasons of a TV show, as opposed to changing a design that's been the mainstay for decades.
Right, right, right. No, but it's just worth considering that we were probably always going to be resistant to it, to the change.
There was a change for the better.
And I do think it's on them to justify it. I think that ultimately that it has to come down to they either have to justify it with a good story reason, or it just has to be so cool when we actually see it in motion and when the Klingons are speaking that it wins us over. If not, then it's going to be a ding against it, and hopefully the show will be awesome enough that it'll just be it'll mark them, knock them from an A to an A minus.
But I do encourage everyone who is also upset about the look of these Klingons to give the show a fair chance, because if you pay attention to what the actors are saying, what the writers are saying, you know, that I am liking what I'm hearing. So, like I've said this before, they are either the right people for the right job, or they just know exactly all the right things to say to...
They're the smoothest con men of all time.
To trick me into thinking they're doing an awesome job, but... I'm inclined to believe the former, and I will until I have reason to believe otherwise. So we'll be checking these Klingons out on September 24th, and hoping that the narrative and the acting and the writing is just strong enough that I'll get over it. So let us know what you think. If you hate these Klingons, if you think I'm a stupid, whiny fanboy who needs to get a life and not worry about it, drop a comment. Or if you think these Klingons are just the shittiest thing to ever happen to Trek, let us know. And until next time,
live long and prosper, y'all.
Thank all of you so much for checking out this installment of Tex Trek. I hope you enjoyed it. Please be sure to like our YouTube videos and subscribe to our channel. Audio-only versions of episodes are available at our website, www.tex-trek.com. Please check out our site, especially if you just want an audio-only podcast. We have that available for you. Y'all can also keep up with us online. You can follow us on Twitter, at TX Trek, or you can check us out on Facebook at www.facebook.com/tex-trek. Please, by all means, let us know what you think by dropping a comment anywhere you see fit. We definitely want to hear your feedback. Let us know what you liked and what you would like to see more of, what you would like to see differently going forward. If you want to email me directly, go ahead. I can be reached at fatheryactual@tex-trek.com. Thank all y'all again. Take care.